really just locked into the game, you know, and just being aggressive at all times. I didn't. That's the first time hearing it. I didn't know I scored 15 straight, but you know, that's just being in the zone, being locked in. You know, I want to really win this game. You know, that was a team who competed their tails off from start to finish. You know, we respect them because they punched us. You know, and they showed us that they can play and compete with the best of them. So. You know, it was, for me, it was just staying aggressive, taking what the defense gave me and taking advantage of my matchups.
You've talked a lot about, obviously, your guys' record against teams under 500. You get the win today. How important is it, the effort, putting in the habits of a night-in, night-out performance? How important was that, even, you know, relative to the win?
I think it's beyond important, you know, realizing that if we play this way, you know, each and every game, then we'll have a great chance of winning, you know.
All right, that, of course, would be Wizards guard Bradley Beal. He had not one, not two, not three, but 39 points, 17 in the fourth quarter, as the Wizards beat the red-hot Chicago Bulls 114-110. Todd Dibas bet the Bulls win a game, or the Bulls, the Wizards win Bulls. A game against a team that was really good lately, yet has a losing record. So it's very confusing as to how to look at it from which of these storylines we have to look at. Either way, it is a win. Kudos for the Wizards. And the year on the right note. How about that?
Yeah, a recovery win, too, after an abysmal first quarter. That it looked like we were going down a very familiar path of win against good team, followed by what the hell is going on.
Oh no! The Bulls had 38 points in the first quarter, and it definitely looked like, oh boy, here we go again. But the Wizards did get it going. We'll talk about that. Maybe we'll throw in some end of year conversation here on the last official podcast of the Locked On Wizards podcast for 2017.
The crowd goes wild.
The crowd goes wild. I didn't do the math to see what number of podcasts this was, but it's over five. I know I've done at least five this year.
Yes, you've done more than five podcasts.
I guess I should officially say this is Ben Standing. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Standing. Todd is at Todd_Dibas. And, of course, you can read what he wrote off of this game in the Washington Times. It will be in the print edition, in fact, I was told. Had a spoiler alert, so you can find that.
Yeah, people will be climbing over themselves tomorrow to get to the newspaper boxes out on the streets.
Hey, man, you know what? Those newspaper boxes are important. Some things in life need to change. The newspaper boxes, I like that they still exist. It reminds me of how things once were.
Yeah, unless it's the grouping where there's like six or eight slots, and now only like two of the slots have something in the front, and the rest have anything ranging from garbage to feces to God knows what else in there, I have seen in some of our larger cities around this great country.
Wow, that is some foulness right there. The Wizards were...
It's a nice nutshell of the industry.
Yes, very good point. So, Wizards win, they make big plays late, Bradley Beal and John Wall. I mean, this may have been their most stat-stuffing game of the year between the two of them. Beal, 39 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists. Yes, he is well aware that he missed a triple-double by one of each. He also made 7 threes. He also missed 2 free throws. His only 2 free throws he took, missed 2 of them with like 19 seconds left. Really could have screwed the Wizards, but they worked that out. John Wall, 21 points, 9 assists, 6 rebounds, and 4 blocks. So those two certainly did their part offensively. We can maybe quibble about some some lack of hustling at times from the point guard, as we've seen at times. But he also made big plays late, had the go-ahead three-point play, again, the block. So overall, I would say for me, and I keep harping on this, if other people want to disagree, bite me. They got to put in the good habits game in, game out. It's more important. It's even more important than the wins and the losses. If you don't play hard every night, you will get caught, even when you're playing the Clevelands and Bostons, because you will not show up for a game or a quarter or whatever it is and screw yourself. So for that first quarter aside, they, for the most part, did that today. So for me, I take that as much as the win as anything else.
Yeah, and I think specific to the first quarter today, I was surprised at the pace that the Bulls are playing with and the versatility of both of their units, especially with Mirotić coming off the bench makes them super flexible. But to your point of playing, with the proper habits. This is what we expected from the start of the season, right? Because we had seen them do just that, and that's why they were advancing in the playoffs. That's why they won the division in 49 games last season. They're bringing back everybody with seemingly an improved bench, and yet we weren't seeing that often. So, and we didn't see it for a spell tonight, but they had more depth of talent, I think, and that just eventually kind of took over, and there they were, happy to head out into the evening on New Year's Eve.
And you know what? Like, here's a subtle, nah, I shouldn't say subtle, but, like, it wasn't discussed, I don't think, post-game. I don't think it was mentioned in the locker room. This individual I'm about to mention, he didn't talk post-game. But of all, like, the sort of the rounding into shape, the getting better, they are now 7-3 since Wall's come back. I mean, they haven't had necessarily that 5-6-7 game winning streak, but 7-3 since he's come back. Markieff Morris has 11 rebounds. Now, he got into early foul trouble.
Just 24 minutes.
In just 24 minutes. Getting those 11 rebounds, I mean, that really is a tremendous sign because he's only been averaging, I think, like under 5 a game up till this point, or at least he did last time I looked. That is huge. He went 1-for-6 from the field. If he goes 1-for-6 from the field and gets 11 rebounds, you know, do better than 1-for-6. But I think on some level, Scott Brooks would almost take that because he knows Beal and Wall will get their points. Tonight, Mike Scott, another Mike Scott performance. He just makes every shot he's basically taking. Oubre was hitting shots. So they can get offense in places. The getting the rebounds, especially when they go small, is so key. And so for him to get 11 rebounds, that to me is a big sign of them starting to round into shape, combined with, again, the better effort against a under 500 team. The small ball lineup generally worked again tonight, even with Mike Scott at the five. So good sign, I think, for the Markieff thing. He's starting to look more like the guy that they absolutely have got to have a real chances here.
Yeah, he mentioned after the Christmas Day game against the Celtics that he thought the small ball lineup was their scrappier lineup. It certainly makes them faster, obviously, and improves their spacing, but he also thought that it has a lot of fight in it. We did see Brooks today stick with small ball, even when Chicago put Robin Lopez back into the game and just kind of take what happens with Mike. It was Mike Scott often on Robin Lopez. Hoiberg called a timeout at one point, immediately out of the timeout. They gave the ball to Robin Lopez. He gets an and one. He got another post up right after that. But Brooks said afterward, you know, go ahead. If you want to run your offense that way through Robin Lopez, which is not what they want to do, then go ahead and we're going to live with the outcome. I thought that was an interesting course of decision-making for him that I don't feel like we've always seen that this season and maybe even prior.
I love that whole situation because you see this often. We'll all do it. I mean, fans do it, but I think we all see do it. You see a matchup like, oh, go do that thing. But if sometimes that's exactly what the other team will put you in a defensive, give you the upper hand in theory, because now it will take the ball away from where you typically want it to go. And right, the way they've been winning because Nikola Mirotic has been crazy from three, Markkanen's making threes, Chris Dunn's getting points. And you know, with Lopez, he was 7-for-8 from the field, 16 points, but that's not their bread and butter. That takes them out of what they're trying to do. So, to that point, I think that's a good way to go. And that lineup in the first half where the Bulls are up 12 when Mike Scott went to center, the Wizards went on a 9-0 or 9-2 run and got back into it, and then it kind of stayed, for the most part, fairly competitive from there. So, all right. So, here, we're here. This is it. Breaking news, 2017 will end today. How are you feeling about this team now?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me how I'm feeling about 2017.
Oh, I don't think anybody wants to go there, do we?
The modest surprise that we're all alive as midnight approaches. How am I feeling about this team? I feel the same as I did, as I have really all season. I think their depth of talent is better. I think they have a good shot to grapple with the top teams in the conference. Cleveland, of course, I think is the biggest complication when the playoffs come. I know that's hashtag analysis, basically. But I think they can play with Toronto in a series. They can play with Boston in a series. It would be nice for them to stop kind of giving away games, at this point, they're already in a position where it's going to be hard for them to be more than the four seed, even though we're just about to reach the midway point in the season. They've kind of lost contact with those top three, which would put them on the road, presumably, in the second round. But I think it's there. I think at the trade deadline, as you and I have discussed multiple trade scenarios, from the semi-nuclear option versus doing something a little more subtle, I'm still in the more subtle camp. I think you could find a shooting guard off the bench to give you a bit of a boost and maybe even someone else to come with that bench rotation. But as we've talked about often, once the playoffs come, you're only talking about seven or eight guys. So who are those guys going to be? Obviously, Mike Scott's going to be one, and it certainly appears that Satoransky's going to be one. So to me, once we get into the first week of February, is what can you do at backup shooting guard, especially if, you know, Beal just played 45 minutes tonight? Are you going to be able to maintain pushing toward the top of the conference in the second half of the season while also properly managing Beal's minutes as everything winds down? So that's, to me, another reason to get a shooting guard who can spell him. Yeah, for a bit.
I mean, Beal played 45 minutes tonight. Now the Wizards are off until Wednesday. Yeah. There's no practice Monday for the holiday, but probably wouldn't be regardless because of the opportunity to get off, to take a day off because you're not playing until Wednesday when they host the Knicks. So no travel and off, so that'll have them play more. But yeah, I think that is the wing position slash behind Beal is the spot to go. I will say this at this point. We often have lively conversations about Kelly Oubre, mm-hmm. but when you look at what can the Wizards do to make a trade? I mean, the Otto Porter thing hasn't made sense pretty much from Jump Street for 100 reasons, including he's no longer a bargain for anybody else. You got to make the money match, and also he's really good. I mean, he wasn't incredible today, but you know, last game he went 7-11 from three, and he's become obviously a very good player. But we talk about the small ball lineup; it may be their most effective lineup. And it's with Oubre out there.
Sure.
So it's going to be really hard. I don't know what you would have. And, you know, factoring the cheap talent, we can worry about how are they going to extend him down the line. But, you know, even for next year, he's going to be big. So I don't think you can even really trade Oubre at this point. I think really the only thing they can do if they want to make a significant trade, something to the effect of what they did last year with Bogdanović, is pretty much trading the first. I would not be in favor of them trading the first for a rental again. At some point, you have to keep guys going. You have to have assets going forward. Another deal like that, I think, would be unwise. If you can make the Markieff Morris type scenario, where you bring the guy in who will be here for multiple years, then that's a different story. But to do it for a rental, I would struggle with. But I would agree.
Yeah, you kind of want to stick in the second round if you're going to rent, and if you're going to do something on a modest contract for more than a rental, you know, a year plus. At least, then you're dipping into that first round.
And sure. Obviously, you know, they've gone in recent years. You know, last year they pick up Brandon Jennings after he got cut by the Knicks. A couple years prior, they pick up Will Bynum when he comes back from China.
Right.
So there are some options without having to make a big trade. Obviously, it's you get what you pay for kind of scenario. But at the same point,
that's what I was going to say. Like, what will Bellinelli cost? You know, right. What will Rodney Hood cost if Utah decides, you know, we're going to do something here before he walks, and we're obviously not getting it done in the West this year.
But I guess what I was going to say is if Wall and Beal are each playing like 38 minutes a game in the playoffs, that only leaves, 20.
Sure.
Well, if Satoransky is getting some of that behind Wall, then really we're not talking about that much for somebody else. So you could potentially get away with it.
I will quickly point out, though, that that little blip could turn into Brandon Jennings.
Sure.
What Brandon Jennings did last year in an enormously tight series. And he was, I almost used a swear word. I almost used a bad word on the podcast. He was very poor. So bad that in his exit interview, he said he didn't show up in the series. So that's the danger of the doing it cheap. And we also know that this team is over the tax and is doing stuff during the course of the regular season to save pennies. So who knows what kind of pennies they're going to be looking to save at the end of the year, too.
Well, what I was going to say is that it last year, I mean, we talked about this 100 times. Why on earth did Brooks keep playing Jennings with a wall? Terrible pairing.
Yep.
Even if Jennings was playing at his best possible, they neither can shoot. He did it in part because he didn't have another guard to go to. And I only say this because Satoransky, this next month before the training deadline, you know, today we see a little bit of Satoransky with a three-guard lineup. He made a three in that stretch. If he can show enough to be the real third guard that they can feel comfortable putting him in with either guy, that does a little bit change the dynamic of that situation is all mm-hmm. I'm saying. If as much as we've talked about him a lot, you know, he's still a little bit shaky.
I think their primary concern in the playoffs would be just his general ball handling and bringing the ball up and getting things started and when the heat is going to be so much higher than it is during the regular season. We already see him. He's got to turn his back often at the point of starting the play in order to keep his dribble away from especially smaller guards. So that would be a concern. But yes, he gives you some more flexibility. I mean, look, he can't be worse than Brandon Jennings was. It's almost mathematically impossible to be worse than Jennings was in the Celtics series. And to your point's certainly correct about the amount of time whoever that person is going to be playing. But the impact when everything is so amplified, even if it's only 5 minutes,
sure.
Those are 5 minutes in the Eastern Conference semifinals against the number one team in the league in their place.
I guess my only point would only be this. I'm 100% with you. That said, they need that upgrade. If Satoransky shows them enough over the next few weeks, knowing that you've got Oubre, you've got Scott, and Mahimi's going to play, mm-hmm. that's 9 guys right there combined with the starters. At some point, you can't – that's probably already at most of what Brooks would want to use. So you could probably use – if need be, use Otto/Oubre a touch more in the backcourt. So, whatever. I'm just saying, I think that's, for me, what will be interesting over this next month. Does Satoransky show enough for them to really feel good that he's their third guard? If he doesn't, then they probably have to make some kind of move, maybe even a bigger move like you're talking about, which wouldn't be a bad one anyway. I just don't know if I can give up the first-round pick anymore.
Sure.
But they may have no choice. If things go wrong over the next month, they may have to go down that path one more time.
And down the line, I mean... You know, even if that pick is number 22, 24, wherever it falls, it's going to be way cheaper than a lot of other options. And we know that this, again, to mention that these guys are over the tax and already trying to find ways to backtrack how far over they are by leaving an empty roster spot basically throughout the season, it seems it's going to be, you know, that's on their mind too.
For no particular reason, I did the math. Would want to guess what the Wizards' actual record is in 2017, the calendar year.
How many total games?
86.
I'll say they won 86 games. I'll say they won 47.
So even though they still have not had a 50-win season in an actual year, in 2017 they went 53-33. 33-17 last year, even though they're barely over 500 this year. Compared to the Cavs in the same 2017, 50-36. So the Wizards had a better record than the Cavaliers in 2017. Take that. Imagine that. Imagine I tell you that on January 1st.
Winning off the field. That's what that feels like, winning off the field.
That does a little bit. Cleveland. I think the Wizards would have taken Cleveland's...
Yeah, we'll go ahead and swap.
Yeah.
Ultimate outcomes, yeah.
Yeah, taking that one. So, yeah, man. So, look, I mean, you know, we have a rule on this podcast. Until they actually truly put in together a run, we're not going to say the turnaround is occurring. I will just say that, you know... There's a little more, you know, there's still some steps back, but there's more steps forward over these last 10 games or so. Everybody's healthy. Like we point to the Markieff Morris thing. The bench has continued to be solid. It really comes down to the starters have to play, get to the level they were at last year. They do it at times, particularly against the Celtics and the Cavs on these national TV games, the Rockets. That's it. If they do that, I really think this team is a 50-plus win team. If they don't, we'll just be talking about sideways Wizards all year.
That's what I was going to say, is the elements of a turnaround are A, seemingly not hard to achieve, and B, certainly not hard to find, right? If we keep talking about effort, no one is disparaging their talent. So that should make any form of turnaround much more convenient than it would otherwise. Did you just get a special invite on for New Year's Eve party?
Somebody just sent me a funny message, so I had a smile. I'll tell you later.
All right. Wink, wink. Wow. I mean, that could be the range of possibilities for what could be in this message are staggering. Tune in Monday to find out what was in that message. But yeah, the elements of them getting their act together, pretty simplistic. Talent is there. They've actually done it before. It's almost more of an outlier for them to be wishy-washy than it would be for them to be one of the more potent teams in the East.
We're going to do I guess here in the next day or two, Wizards New Year's resolutions. I've been asking people to send me some suggestions. You can still do that. Hashtag WizResolutions at Ben Standing on Twitter. Todd almost choked his water down when I said that one. So I'm somewhat putting you on the spot. Would you like to offer a suggestion? Anybody on the team, the head coach, the GM, any player? But there's been some good ones so far. I can imagine what you're saying. This is not a resolution, but I'll just throw this in there. I think for Sheldon Mack, the resolution is get back on the court soon. I talked to him today because somebody asked me how he's doing, and he said he's good. He said he's back to doing some stuff on the court. He's shooting, but he's not really going to get full blown action for another couple months. But he did say his plan is to play in summer league, which is a good. Good. I mean, needs that, but that was I was already wondering, well, who, if the Wizards trade their picks away like they seemingly do every year, who would be on the summer league team? I was like, oh, better be Sheldon Mack, because otherwise I won't. It's gonna be a weird team. So I guess I don't know if it's a resolution, but just for him, just keep fighting the good fight and do the rehab thing. I vamped enough. You got anything?
You'll be surprised at this. I have a resolution recommendation for Kelly Oubre.
Sure, that's what we're waiting on.
Never to throw a bounce pass on the break again. I resolve to never throw a bounce pass on the break again. Cheers, everybody. See you in 2018. This should be a phrase from him later this evening.
That was not a good play. That was not a good play. I will say, I guess just to that point, this would be for him, but also for Markieff Morris. The idea of that, they still, the two of them, Oubre got a tech today.
After he committed a foul and they were down 10 points.
And Morris, he picked up two fouls early, and we obviously know, and then he got a third one in the first half, and we know his penchant for getting the techs. I mean, not to say that they're the two most important guys on the team, but each of them gives the Wizards such a specific kind of look that they're not certain, especially with Morris, they're going to get somewhere else. For those two in particular, harness the energy. You can't, I get it, you're feeling like you don't want to get punked, somebody's pushing you, you want to push back, especially once you get later in the season, you've got to understand you're way more valuable to your team on the court and not in foul trouble than otherwise. And I'm not even talking about what you bring to do Olynyk last year, but just the basics. You can't get text for stupid stuff. I mean, if there's the other guy does something for totally egregious, some things will happen. But you got to keep it under control. I would say it's a big deal because that is especially at the wing spot, they don't really, other than Oubre is the only guy where anybody feels remotely comfortable with right now behind Otto or Beal, and they don't have a guy, even if Oubre is out, they don't have another guy behind him to fill in that three spot, so got to stay on the court.
Yeah, and I actually thought Oubre did a good job of, Brooks was infuriated with the pass and then what happened afterward, the foul, and so he subbed him, but he put him back in right at the end for defensive possession, and then also he was one of the reasons that after Beal missed the second free throw that the Wizards were able to kind of poke that around and keep it alive until they came up with it and Wall was fouled. So good for him for when he went back in the most important part of the game that he was paying attention and doing what he needed to do.
I hate to end our last podcast of the year on a bad note, but you're an Oakland Raiders fan. They just fired your head coach. So you know what that means.
John Gruden.
Tonight. Oh, this is great news.
What do you mean? What's the bad news?
This is great news for America. John Gruden off of Monday Night Football. Oh, my Lord. Thank you. I don't know who's going to come in there next. I'm not worried about him as a coach. Mm-hmm. I'm just concerned about him on my television. I just something different. So I'm glad for that. I don't know if you're happy with it, with that change.
I watched zero Monday Night Football games this year.
Well, you know, the football team I cover sometimes is on it, so you have the
sort well, of I would that. Say outside of yeah, outside of them, yeah.
Plus, there's you know, you got the fantasy football thing once in a while.
I was busy syncing up the local radio broadcast of the Redskins game with the Monday Night game.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, you gotta find out if they're gonna win the skin tangibles in any given game, so you gotta listen to it. All right, man. Well, look, let's end it here before we get in any more trouble. Thank you, Mr. Dibas, for doing at least, you know, some of those five podcasts that I did this year. Greatly appreciate your time. Many thanks, of course, to, since I'm ticking off names here, Adam Rubin for always being willing to come on, Rashad Mobley, Kyle Weedye. Thanks to, he doesn't have an official title anymore because he didn't want one, but thanks to Neil DeLaw for always listening to the podcast and doing show notes for me and telling me when I screwed things up.
Providing support.
Providing various kinds of support. Rasheen Carbon, one of our favorite followers, is also constantly throwing out suggestions. It was his idea to do the New Year's resolutions, among other ones. And all of you guys for listening, definitely appreciate it. More podcasts to come in 2018. Maybe we'll even have some surprises with the podcast.
Yeah, I think there's going to be some surprises coming up.
Is that true?
I feel it. I feel like something's happening.
That something's happening?
Yes.
Is it like we're going to stop losing, the podcast is going to stop losing to teams under 500?
Only if it uses this good audio equipment.
All right, we'll see what we can do on that front. All right, thanks you guys as always. Have a happy, safe new year. Bradley Beal said don't do anything he wouldn't do, whatever that means. Until next time, see ya.
Beal gets open for three. Dagger!
Long drive, long bounce shot.